The Here podcast is all about reclaiming your power and reconnecting with your mind and body. By releasing our stories and the power they have had over our lives and creating a compassionate and supportive community, we can bring love, understanding, awareness, and healing to ourselves and to all who need it most. Join me in saying, enough is enough. I own my power. I am ready for the next chapter of my life, and it will be the most amazing one yet.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Here Podcast. I'm very happy to have you with me today. And today we're going to be talking with a very awesome guy. His name is Mike Forrester, and he is a self-worth and encouragement coach. That is awesome. Who focuses on helping men overcome fear, anxiety, depression, and limiting beliefs, so they can be the best man, father, husband that they can be and live a strong and vibrant life. So I'm very excited to have this conversation with you today. Thank you so much, Mike, for being on the show.
Thank you, Felicia. I appreciate it.
So let's start. I would love to hear about some of the things that happened when you were younger that caused you to really do what you're doing today, to make you passionate about guiding men and helping men the way you do today.
Gotcha. I would love to tell you that I was born and, you know, came out of the womb and had it all together, but nothing could be further from the truth. And so it's a lot of learning from mistakes and being very fortunate to have other men come along beside me and coach me over decades of learning how to undo things that I learned growing up. So my parents had my brother and I, right? So I was in a family of four. And they both, I don't know if you've heard the saying, you know, hurt people, right? They came out of their own stuff, as I, you know, later learned. And what I grew up with was what they were trained in, how they were raised. And unfortunately, I passed that on to my kids. And that was the big catalyst in realizing how my kids were reacting to my behavior and who I was, and that the saying when I was growing up, you know, I'm never going to treat my kids this way or be like that with my children. Unfortunately, I was. And so going back to my childhood, my dad came out of the military. We did quite a bit of traveling when I was very young. My mom traveled around between, you know, different family members when my father was deployed. And so a lot of the stories that I've heard from when I was younger was because of family that shared it. And it's one of those, you know, like when I didn't behave a certain way, my mother would react and, you know, spank me, do something that, you know, what it wasn't just a spank, but, you know, it went beyond that, right? So most of my childhood, I don't recall. And there's a blessing to that, you know, but it's also kind of one of those you wonder what kind of Pandora's box is there that I haven't opened yet, which used to bother me. But it's one of, you know what, there will come a time, and to rush it doesn't make sense. It's almost, you know, like pulling a scab off a wound. Sometimes if you pull it off too soon, you know, it leaves a scar that wouldn't have been there if you, you know, had let it heal on its own.
Oh, I like so, that analogy.
Thank you. There is enough stuff that I have to work on without going looking for it, right? So I have vivid memories of, you know, having my mom, you know, being frustrated, you know, no matter what my brother or I did, you know, as far as chores, you know, if we were folding towels, we could fold the towels this week the same we folded last week, and it was never the correct way. And that came from, you know, her upbringing, where she never felt like she measured up. And so, you know, again, there's that pattern of things being carried on. You know, so she was very upset. She suffered from depression. I remember being a teenager and trying to help my mom to deal with her depression, not really understanding what it was at the time, just that my mom is sad. Why is my mom sad? And then seeing, you know, like, okay, we need to do something. You can't just continue to, you know, live this way. It's not healthy. You know, and from the pain and the unhealthiness in each of us in our relationships, there were physical dealings with each other. You know, as I got older, I would stand up for myself, which she would then react physically. There are on my arms, you know, like, you know, when you get a suntan, right, your skin normally reacts, you know, with the pigments and stuff. Well, there are certain parts in my arm where when she and I were going at it, that her nails got into my skin and I don't tan. So, you know, and it's one of those of, you can look past that and just go, that's only on the surface. And that's true. But in those kind of times, you know, when you're a kid, even when you're an adult and you get into a fight, things are said to impact, you know, somebody. You know, you might not be throwing a physical left hook, but you could be throwing a verbal left hook. Yeah. And often those verbal ones hit us emotionally in a harder manner and stick with us longer, right? The pain could go away from that physical punch, but that emotional punch will stay there for a lifetime. And so, you know, like the interesting thing, I remember growing up as a kid. Well, let me back up and we'll go at this a different way. About 5-6 months ago, my wife and I drove from Kansas out to California to see some family and attend a conference. And, you know, there is desert between here and there. And as we're going through the desert, I'm like, why do I hate the desert? Not just dislike, hate. Because there was nothing that it was ever like, hey, I had to live in the desert. I didn't have a bad experience, you know, like I wasn't lost in the desert. There's nothing like that. So on the surface, you know, it's like, what's going on? But my mother being paranoid, schizophrenic, we grew up in a duplex. And so she would cover, you know, like our phone, not like the cell phones, but, you know, go back to where you're talking about, like, you know, like the old receiver phones, you know?
Yeah, with the cords that would tangle and yeah.
Yes. And they were always tangled, no matter what you did. Yeah. She would cover that with a blanket, with the idea that she didn't want either of our neighbors to hear when the phone rang, so they didn't know our business. Now, sadly, we had no business to be known, in all honesty. But that was her fear, right? That's where she's looking at things and going, people are out to get me. In all honesty, nobody cared. But her perception was, I don't want people knowing what's going on in my life and being fearful that people, you know, were out to get her and they're the ones that live next door. That's scary. Yeah. You know, so she would have my dad put us all in the car, and we are, you know, junior high, probably high school, my brother and I. He may have actually been elementary even at times, but she would have him drive us out to the desert in our car, and she would berate us, right? She would tear us down for every infraction that we had done that she was keeping a tally of. And so she would tear my father down. She would tear us down. And that, to her, being in the desert, was a safe place because nobody was around to hear her scream, right? To hear her yelling at us. The second part of this equation was that my dad, being ex-military and very focused on his survival ability, would say, you could put me in the desert with a knife, you'd never find me, and I'd be okay. There are two major emotional factors at play for, you know, for a child to be looking at. And it wasn't until I'm traveling, you know, 6 months ago, where it's like I'm talking with my wife, you know, keep in mind, I'm like 48 at this point. And I'm like, why do I hate the desert? And it's not until we're talking about it that it's like, oh, huh. You know, and so it's that, yeah, I mean, it's crazy, right?
Yeah, you would even, when you were talking earlier and mentioned, I have enough stuff that I'm aware of to not dig in and find the things that I don't know. And I experience the exact same things. I will, there'll be maybe a show or actually maybe I don't even know. And all of the sudden I have this response, whatever it might be, if it's fear or anger or disgust. And it's like my body knows, or deep in my subconscious knows, but I don't even know why I'm responding the way I am. And I either have to really, really dig if it's something that's bothered me tremendously, or, you know, just move past it and maybe save it for another time. But yeah.
Right. And now the unfortunate thing is those beliefs, whether we realize them or not, you know, those thoughts will drive our decisions personally, professionally, you know, our internal thoughts. I mean, just because we don't, you know, consciously recognize them doesn't mean they're at play helping us within our decision process, or, you know, like, you know, fear for me because of the way I had grown up was a big driver. I didn't want to fail. And so, I was always afraid of doing something wrong, because if we go back to like my mother, you know, tearing us all to bits for doing stuff wrong, it's like, don't screw up. And so I would almost never take a risk because I didn't want to screw up. And, you know, for me, screwing up meant I didn't have approval. You know, I wasn't okay. I wasn't validated. I wasn't worthy or worthwhile. And so there's all these things that are adding up to it. Well, guess what? Life requires you to take risks. But when that's your driving force, you're going to play differently. So,
yeah, you're absolutely right. I was literally, this is not related to experiencing abuse, but I'm listening to, Jen Sincero. Oh, I totally am misspelling it. But it's about, you're a badass at making money. It's a book. And okay. she was talking about this, and I was just listening to it today, about how you can tell yourself, yeah, I'm open to making money. I want to make money. I feel good about making money. But the deeper thoughts, the deeper in your unconscious that you might not even be aware of, that these tapes that are playing from things maybe you learned, your parents, you saw your parents fighting over money, these negative things that are related to money, that are deep inside that you don't even know of. You have to clear that out. You can't just be like, you can't just speak the words. You also have to clear the stuff out that's in your mind. It's like a team playing together.
Yes. It is one that will drive you in all aspects of your life. And unless you know, kind of decide to really dig in, it'll continue to, you know, to be the one steering the bus. So while you're up at the front of the bus, you're not the one driving. Or if you are, you're driving, you know, with, you know, reversed, you know, controls. So, my brother and I have had some great conversations just talking about his perspective, his memory of stuff, my memory of stuff. And each one of us will handle things differently, right? We'll remember things differently. But it's what really keeps us moving forward and how we interact with things. I had good intentions as a dad to raise my kids to be happy, secure, you know, all the things you as a parent want for your children. Well, my intentions were not the way I executed things. And so I passed along that fear into my kids so that they didn't, you know, play big. They didn't take a risk because dad would get mad and dad would yell and then they'd have to walk on eggshells and, you know, that whole cycle. I passed it along and I never meant to, but it's that upbringing and those tapes that you're talking about that we'll pass along and that legacy continues. Like I said, unintended, there it is. I'm training my kids how to react. And it's certainly legacy I did not want to leave because, you know, my children may have children. Some of them are already, yeah. You know, so it's like, I don't want my grandsons or granddaughters, you know, doing that, much less, you know, the next generation after that. So it's uncomfortable addressing the beliefs that we have, but I would rather go through the process and the pain of it than pass that along and think of the generations after that are going to have to do the same thing if I don't. That's not at all what I want to do. And I don't think that's what any of us want to do. So, you know, we just have to look at it and frame it. So it's like, okay, this pain is going to pass one way or the other, you know, whether I address it or I pass it along and my children have to address it, somebody's going to have to stop it. I hated my parents for the longest time. It wasn't until I went through a coaching process that it brought me to the point of having pity and apathy for my parents because they were doing the best that they could. They were doing what they knew how to do and loving me the best that they could. Now, it didn't play out in a way that I felt loved, and it doesn't mean what they did was okay, but they did their best. And I know as a parent, when I'm trying to do my best and, you know, like what I'm intending, I would hope that I'm judged on my intentions. And so if I look back at my parents, I can go, I know that's not what they meant to come across, but they're hurt. And this is the way they reacted, just as I've done stuff in a way I wouldn't have wanted, you know, the way it's been received. So, yeah, I don't know if that makes sense, but that was really the driving force that I want to leave that as what my family inherits from me. So,
yeah, no, it absolutely made a ton of sense. I was the exact same, and it's probably the thing that pains me the most, but I need to, you know, move forward, is I was the same way. So my dad, my stepdad, who is my dad, he was always, I just remember him always being very angry and stressed. I know he loved me. He worked tirelessly, and he was just always angry and stressed and short-tempered. And, you know, would smack me or yell at me. And for things like, I didn't even understand why he was so mad. And I always thought, oh, I will never be that way. I will never, ever be that way with my children. And I don't hit my children. So that was one thing. Like, I remember how horrible I felt when he hit me. So I never wanted to do that. And so I haven't ever hit my children, but I'm a yeller. And I have a super, or I was, I'm much better now, but a yeller with a super short temper. And then I would yell and I would see their faces and then that guilt, right? And then once you feel that guilt, I would start feeling like, I'm not good enough to be their mom. They'd be better off without me. And that spiral. And it was just like this cycle. And so when they got a little bit older, and well, when I first had them, actually, that's when I started to want to heal. I have to be better. I have to be better for them. Then as they grew up a little bit, and I was yelling and short tempered, just seeing their faces, I was like, I have to change this. And it was so hard. I do it way less now, that short-tempered yell, but it took a lot of work, and it still takes a lot of work to change that. And looking back, that's exactly what my dad did that I didn't want to, you know, recreate with my children, and I did.
But here's the amazing thing. You're being intentional about changing that. Yeah. And nobody's expecting you to be perfect. I mean, I don't know that anybody is looking and going, oh my gosh, you know, you slipped up. And so, you know, forget any kind of credit as far as validity in your parenting or anything. We're all struggling as parents. Heck, I don't know that anybody's been given a manual on how to parent. The only thing that we have is what we grew up with. And a lot of the time, it's coming out of a place of hurt, right? Yeah. And so we're doing the best we can with where we've been raised. It's unintentional that we're continuing to pass along what we did learn and what we experienced. And you're right. It is hard. I mean, a week ago, you know, it's like, I'm tired. I'm, you know, struggling with a couple things. I start slipping back because it's like that pattern is still there. And it's still one of those of you have to keep yourself like in the best place that you can. Like self-care is very important because when we start getting tired, we start getting frustrated, those are the times that we're most likely to have that relapse, to go back to the person we don't want to be. And, you know, it's like Netflix just isn't worth it. Neither is, you know, is the vast majority of the stuff out there, you know. And it's like, how do I want to interact with my family and my friends? Okay, great. What do I need to do and get there? You know, it's like, you have to give self-care the priority it needs. But when we do slip up, you have to give yourself the grace. And one of the hardest lessons I think I learned was being honest and apologizing to my family, rather than trying to say, I'm right, you're wrong, and, you know, pass judgment as far as me being the almighty father, having to come and say, you know what, you caught the brunt of this. It's not something that you should have. I apologize. Can you forgive me? And it doesn't, you know, undo and reverse everything, but it sure as heck goes a long way in healing the relationship, you know, with whomever, you know, you've blown up with. And then giving yourself the grace in that, okay, hey, you know, this is what you did. That's not who you want to be. What do you need to do different? And, you know, okay, you know, forgive yourself and continue to move forward. But yeah, the fact that you're, you know, being intentional, and that's something you realized, is huge.
I'm doing my best. I totally think about it. Like we have a tool belt, right, that we got when we inherited this tool belt. Probably had some old janky tools that we can't even use in it. And then some good ones too. And then it's right. Like one tool at a time. So, you know, like replacing one tool at a time, but it's totally, totally worth it, because I do know that even sometimes you might not realize it fully, but one day I will respond to something in a way I never have before, in a good way, in a calm way. And I realize, oh my gosh, this work, it's working. It's working. I'm healing.
And it does. And the important thing is to reflect on it, right? So before you had kids, you know, and you would have reacted, would it have been in the same manner? Probably not. But look at the progress that you've made and the way that you've grown, you know, from where you started. And to me, that's an important thing, is to look at the growth rather than, okay, I just, you know, did X, you know, I blew up at my, you know, one of my kids, I blew up at my wife. Okay. Yep. I did. But let's take a moment, you know, like I talked about, you know, ask for forgiveness, go apologize, and then look at where you've come from to give yourself that encouragement to keep fighting, because who you were isn't who you are. And just because you, going back to the saying, you know, just because you fail, you doesn't make you a failure. It's the same thing. Just because I stumble doesn't mean that that's who I am. It's not defining my identity, right? Doesn't define yours either. So, grace and forgiveness is huge. Of ourselves is probably the hardest part.
Yes, I agree. And even when I go back, and because I have apologized to my kids, and I remember them looking at me like, what? Like, they didn't even really, they didn't hold that with them, or it didn't, I guess, I felt like I was just a horrible mom, and they didn't see it that way at all, which makes me really happy. But yeah, we're really hard on ourselves. I think it's really great that you are working with men, and I imagine it's really hard, because what I see out there is a lot of men shouldn't be sharing their feelings. They shouldn't be crying. They need to be, you know, taking care of the family. And I know even with my own husband, and we have, a dual income household, but he still, like, if he is having a hard sales month, you can just see he seems, he just is very bummed. And when he finally does talk to me about it, probably because I'm a little too persistent in wanting to make things better, I know I need to, you know, kind of rein that in. But when he finally shares with me, it's all about around him not providing and him being a failure to us, even though he's an amazing provider and he is an amazing man in general. Like, I don't even care, you know, what's going on with company wise, you know what I mean? And yes. he doesn't see it that way. And I could even tell him that. I'm like, are you kidding? Look at all the ways you provide for us with your love and your support and just everything you do. And I could tell it's not going in.
And you're spot on. That's it. It's so much of our identity is wrapped up in what we can provide. You talked about your stepdad, right? Working super hard. It's that unwritten expectation that I will be able to provide and make a difference. I will be able to protect my family. That is kind of like what you're dealing with. Now, as far as sharing, that's not usually something that we're told is okay. And some of it will stem from, you know, or can stem from how you're raised, right? Because, like, when I was growing up, I was struggling with my identity. And so I didn't really know who I was. And so when you have your identity really wrapped up in something like, hey, I'm this guy, this is my position, when that's removed or it comes into question, the foundation upon which you stand starts to feel like quicksand. And so now you're unsure of stuff. Great. Do I have a job? Does my wife still love me? Do my kids still respect me? And it's mostly going to be revolved around respect, right? You know, does my wife still want to be married to me? Does she think I still care for her? You know, all these different relationships around us. And then you've got the you know, the financial aspect and everything there, but guys aren't encouraged to really share. It doesn't mean that guys don't have emotions. We do. We're just expected to keep them bottled up. And so lots of times you will see in statistics where women are higher on, you know, an emotion, let's say depression, right? Women experience a higher percentage of depression. It's not because guys are unfeeling. It's because guys aren't going in for the help. So it's almost like a silent suffering. And that's not to say that, you know, guy suffering is more or less than a woman's or anything like that. Suffering is suffering, yeah. whether it's from male, female, it doesn't matter. It's just to say that there is suffering, and just because you can't see it or it's not verbalized doesn't necessarily mean it's there. It's not there. So, you know, like with my wife, very much like what you're talking about with your husband. If something happened at work and I thought it was a negative situation, I wouldn't necessarily tell my wife. I would play it through my head and go, does she need to know? And how would this impact her? Which in essence then looks at me and goes, how is it going to impact her perspective of me? And so I would keep that away from her because I'm trying to protect her. Now I know that doesn't make sense when you step outside, but when you're the one going, I love my wife. I want to protect her. I want to care and love for her as best I can. There are times where you go, I'm going to insulate her from the truth and the situation. Crazy thing is, just like you, you're looking at your husband going, I know something's up. and there is no secret here, because my wife would do the same thing. She would look at me like, what's up? Nothing, honey. What's up? Nothing, honey. I'm okay. Yeah, you're on edge, you know, like you're medicating through food or, you know, whatever I'm doing. A wife knows her husband. You know, we study each other. We know each other. When something's off, it's apparent. And the thing is, it's like men and women both need community to be able to speak about this kind of stuff, you know. I think it's more accepted for the ladies, but for the guys, it's like you need to surround yourself with other men who can, you know, walk alongside of you through the type of situation that you're going through. It's a lot of times just getting it out and going, I'm not the only one, because so much of the time when you're quiet, you're left to think, I'm the only one struggling with this type of situation. I'm really screwed up because nobody else will get this. And there's a whole string of thoughts that go along with it. And there's sadly nothing further from the truth. Bob, who's sitting 5 feet away from you, is thinking the same thoughts, going through a similar situation, or it could be a different one. But it's because we're not talking, we don't have any basis to know that it's not just us. It's, you know, walking this path and feeling the same way. So
I love that you said that, because I just love that you said that. And because when I look at movies, if you look at the majority of even just media out there, it is that same message. So when you're saying that men don't have, there's not enough men speaking up about what they're going through, so men don't speak up as much. Because even in the movies and in the media, it's always like, you know, suck it up, stop crying. It's always displays like this machismo, like this macho man that has to hold it all in. And I'm so glad. I am a huge believer in the power of sharing your story and being that guiding light for somebody else. And the more people that are speaking up and speaking out, you're helping more people feel like they're not alone and inspiring them, empowering them to step up and also share.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, until I started going through this, you know, as far as the healing and the coaching and the decades of learning that I've gone through, I shut myself off. It wasn't until, you know, I was part of a men's ministry at my church at the time that somebody said, it's okay to cry, because I wasn't doing the typical manly stuff, right? I wasn't educated on how to, you know, work on a car. I looked at it and went, that's cool, but I have no basis of understanding what the heck I'm doing. So while I might want to change the oil, I could be totally screwing things up. You know, that's not the engine, that's the transmission. I had no basis to work from it. But because I assumed, hey, this is what a manly man does, and I'm not finding interest in that, you know, I believed the other stuff. You know, and it wasn't until, you know, like I said, another man told me, you know, hey, it's okay to be emotional. It's okay to show them. And that was really a huge turning point for me. And from that, it's then, you know, been absolutely freeing, because being in touch with your emotions and dealing with them rather than letting them, you know, turn you into the Hulk and letting the emotions run you, is to me a larger sign of strength, you know, in being able to understand what's going on and dealing with it rather than letting it control you. So,
you're so right. It is easier, even though it doesn't feel easy because you're in pain. It's easier just to hold it in, bottle it up, get angry, explode, and then do that again and again. Working on it, realizing it, doing the stuff you need to do to heal that part of you, to grow, it's so much work. It takes so much more work. So you're absolutely right.
And because it takes work is another reason why we need people around us. Because, I mean, think about your friendships. That is a source of strength, right? It's almost like steel around a building, girding it up. You gain strength from having healthy relationships around you, and you can do more than you could on your own. You know, when I'm alone and I don't have relationships around me, especially other men that are healthy, that's usually when I'm going into the negative self-talk. That's when I'm going into unhealthy habits. That's when I start going into depression and, you know, just waiting for my life to pass by. So the relationships are crucial to getting through our growth.
What, based off what you just mentioned, so finding those relationships or that community, what advice do you have for men to take even just an initial step towards being more in touch with who they are and what they're feeling? What would you say?
Great question. Probably not going to be a popular answer, but it involves taking a risk. A lot of the times when you will get into a group of men, you know, like if you go to a small group or, you know, you just have other men that are getting together, nobody's going to take the chance and step forward. So oftentimes it comes down to, you taking the chance on somebody to speak up won't always be, received or reciprocal, like there won't be a reciprocal response to it, you know. So you're going to kind of put yourself out there and go, okay, this is either going to be, you know, a great conversation, or it's going to be crickets. And, you know, so before that, take the time and watch the person. If you're going to take the time, you know, if you're going to take the time and approach somebody, and I would say, do it with an individual, not within a group, so much because you don't know all the different personalities there, but just as like if you're looking for, let's say, a business mentor or leadership mentor, right? You're looking for somebody who has a certain set of characteristics. You're going to be doing that same thing in creating the community around you. You don't need 50 men. You need a handful of men that you can trust and trust you. You know, it's like that band of brothers that has your back, right? And so watch them, see what they do. Is this a characteristic that I want to learn? Is this something I want to embody? How do they treat their wife? How do they treat, you know, their children? How do they build themselves up? Are they growing? Look for those things and take the chance with men who are more likely, you know, stack the odds in your favor, you know, before you take that risk, right? Mm-hmm. So go in educated, and you know, when you're going to make that risk, you're going to make that investment, make sure that who you're investing in is worthy of you taking that risk with them. Because it's not just one-sided, right? You're going to be helping them. If they do want to have that kind of relationship with you, you're going to have their back just as much as they're going to have your back. So make sure it's a relationship you want to enter into in that manner. But a lot of the time it's going to be up to, you know, you as the man taking that first step and taking on that risk.
When I'm thinking about my husband, who is amazing and I love dearly, I think when, like, if I was to say that, you know, men, they take on all the burden of, oh, I need to provide for the family and things like that, that he would be like, yeah, that's how men think. Almost like a, it is what it is. That's as men, how we think, how we're wired, and we just have to deal with it. So I would love for you to share how it feels to actually do the work, not have that mentality of it is what it is, this is how we're wired, to do the work and be liberated from those beliefs and those thoughts.
For me personally, I feel like I am the responsible party in the relationship between my wife and I. My wife is just as much open with like an opinion, like that doesn't, it's not saying, hey, my wife isn't valuable or educated or bringing anything to the table, right? My wife is the best thing for me. And if it wasn't for my wife, I wouldn't be where I am now. So I need her as part of the team. When it comes to, you know, hey, we're going to do this, she trusts me that I have our best interest, not my best interest, but our best interest, both as a married couple and as a family, to make the decision. You know, I cherish her perspective because she doesn't see the things in the same way that I do, right? She is gifted in seeing things completely different. Like I'd be an elephant charging through a china shop without her perspective, because she's looking at it going, dude, do you not see this person or this situation here? Like, this is, you know, some of the repercussions and the fallout of it. I need her, right? And so it's one of those that before I would look at it and go, I'm making this decision whether you are cared for or not in this. And it's taken us a long time to get there, like you talked about, you know, it takes energy.
Is it almost like I'm the man of the house, I know what's best?
Oh my gosh. Well, I came from an insecure position, right? So don't test my, don't question my decision, because that was then questioning my worth, and I already had an issue with worth. So, you know, you're playing like a game of Jenga with me emotionally where I was.
Yeah.
right? Now I'm in a position where it's like, I can ask my wife, hey, how secure are you with this? How are you feeling? What do you see? When we first started that journey, oh my gosh, it was like, I wasn't a secure place for her to tell me how she felt. So I'm asking her questions. Great, I'm checking off the box. But how honest a response do you think I'm going to get when she doesn't feel safe telling me the truth? You know, so I still have those feelings of I want to care for my family, right? I don't know that that would ever go away. But the way I deal with it now is different. I don't hide things from my wife because I know she's going to know anyway. So it's like, you know, it's like trying to go and sneak stuff out of the fridge at midnight. You know, it's like you're not going to get things, you know, when she's just, you know, put like a cake in there, you know, or cupcakes. She knows how many are there, right? She's in tune with who I am and how I'm feeling. So to think that keeping her blocked out is protecting her hurts both of us. It doesn't help her. I love and respect my wife. I mean, she is my best friend. And like I said, I would not be where I am without her. And a lot of the healing has come from her knowing who I am, where I came from, and the, you know, how she's seen me react. Like, she has insight that where I have blind spots, right? So it'd be like trying to back up a truck with one mirror. You're gonna struggle. Whereas when I have my wife outside, she can tell me, hey, here's a hazard, watch this, do this. And I'm then able to successfully address those emotional pitfalls and you know, traps. So when I come at things as a team, it makes a world of difference. So
I love that, because as a team, you are open and honest. You're not trying to hide what you're thinking, what you're feeling, and bottling all of that up. And I think that makes it seem not so daunting as well. I think when I asked the question, I made it seem like this, how do you completely rewire yourself to think in a different way? And that's not really it. You really broke it down to, it could be, it's as simple as, instead of this is all me and my responsibility, and it's not, it's ours. And I need my partner, and we make these decisions together, and it's just like this powerful force together instead of just being you.
If I could, let me try and explain it in a different way as well.
Sure.
So we've talked about how insecurity is a thing I have battled throughout my life, right? Mm-hmm. That's where I came from. And so I have always wanted to help people. That's like my DNA. I like to help people, to see them succeed, and to serve them. Before, though, the reason that I did it came from a place of getting validation. So I would help somebody fix their website or do some yard work or whatever because of the kudos I would get. It was then temporarily satisfying that yearning for validation. Whereas now, it's out of loving somebody, right?
Yes.
So I'm still wanting to help, but my focus is different. My perspective is not coming from an unhealthy place, but it's coming from a healthy place. And so I still feel the responsibility to, you know, to care and love for my wife and children, but it's in a different way. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, that does make
okay.
sense. It actually, I had this big light bulb moment, like a lot of different things went through my head, because I was the same way, where I wanted, I wasn't making a conscious decision. I want to be helpful so that I'm validated. But that is what I got from it, is because I felt so insecure and not confident that I really seeked that approval, that validation constantly. And now, I genuinely want to be there for others because I love them. And starting this podcast, I always say, ah, man, I wish I would have started this years ago because I love it so much, but I couldn't have started it years ago because the intention, I wasn't where I needed to be until now. And you saying that just made that just like bing in my head.
I will admit, and it's hard to say this without getting emotional about it because I can see the pain that I caused. So going back to earlier, how I said I was looking for validation from my parents, right? Mm-hmm. I sacrificed my wife at the altar of wanting my parents' approval. And I never realized that I was doing that until years later when it was brought to my attention. It wasn't that I didn't have people telling me, hey, you're doing this harm to your wife, which, you know, you're hurting yourself in the whole process of it. But I didn't have ears to hear it, just like you're talking about, you know. I can look back and go, I wish I had known this, you know, 15 years ago. No offense, but I wasn't the guy in the place to receive that, nor to be able to process it, because the steps, almost like if you think about a pyramid, right? I didn't have the steps before this built up to be able to now put this stone that's in place now from the current lesson, you know, I'm processing through. So all those things I learned along the way have now gotten me this to this point. They're all crucial, they're all critical, but they build upon each other. And, you know, I mean, that's who I was, unfortunately. And because we went through all that, my wife and I, you know, obviously had to work through all that pain. But the healing that's gone on has made our marriage that much stronger. Now, I'm not suggesting go out and do stuff to harm your marriage to make it stronger. Please don't hear that. You know, but it's because of the stuff we went through and then the healing that we went through afterwards that now it's stronger. So, you know, my parents, I later realized, were not in a place to give the love that I wanted to receive. So I could have sacrificed my wife for, you know, years on and never received what I was looking for. So it's much like you'll see in the movies, you know, there's a guy in corporate America who's working his tail off to receive his father's approval, right? And he doesn't get it and doesn't get it. So he continues to become that workaholic. You know, rather than sacrificing myself, it was my wife that I was doing. Similar thing. I'm still looking for that approval from, you know, from my parents. But what I was sacrificing wasn't just me. It was the relationship with my wife and my wife herself. So
you don't have to answer this, but I wanted to ask, when you say like sacrificing your wife, the relationship with your wife for your parents' approval, what did that look like? And you don't have to answer if you're not comfortable answering that.
No, I don't have a problem answering that.
Even just like one example of,
I would side with my parents on stuff. Okay, so you could ask me what color, this is just like a theoretical example.
Yes.
On it. You could ask me, what color is the sky? If my parents said it was purple, I would say purple, even though I know it's blue, because I was wanting them to say, hey, you're okay. Like,
And if your wife was like, no, honey, it's blue, you'd be like, stop. Exactly. It. It's purple.
Yes. So like, for instance, my parents at one point, right after Y2, you know, the whole Y2K scare, came and lived with us. Was not my wisest moment because they didn't have boundaries, right? And I was not in a healthy place at that time to say, hey, these are the boundaries. But my mom was still suffering from her depression. And So she would get up, be in her pajamas until noon. And, you know, my wife is like looking at me going, hey, you need to talk with your mom because the kids are asking me, mom, you're telling us we need to get dressed and be out of our PJs and, you know, ready to go. But grandma's over here in her PJs. Why is it okay for her and not for us? Kids are smart. Don't ever let them fool you. And, you know, I pushed back on my wife, just telling her, no, it's not. You know, that's not something we have to worry about. Just tell the kids, you know, whatever. But it's one of those, I did not stand with my wife in the conversations where I should have. And instead I took up the position of my parents and appeasing them. So it's, there were arguments and things said that I should not have said about my wife that were not true, to defame her for their recognition, if that makes it make sense. So, yeah. And I mean, it's totally something, you know, that I'm not proud of. I look back at it. I'm still working through it to forgive myself, because it's when you wake up and you start working through stuff, you will begin to see things differently in what you did, right? It may have seemed very normal and inconsequential at the time, but when you're able to reflect with a different mindset and perspective, you can then see, oh, wow, you know, I shouldn't have said that. You know, like if somebody asks you, like, hey, does this hair, you know, hairstyle look great on me? And you just go, well, it's not the most flattering. You know, it's, there are a million other ways to convey that without being frank like that. You know what I mean? And I wish I had been that innocent in saying stuff. Lots of times it was just meant to be mean, to win a conversation, because the way I grew up was whoever yelled the loudest and said the most stinging things walked away the victor. And when you bring that to your marriage, you do not win, even if you think you won. You know, like I spoke about earlier, my parents loved me the best that they could, right? And so the love that they gave me was what I knew as love. When I met my wife before we got married, I knew there was something different about her and the way she was treating me and caring about me. So I have a young lady who's telling me, I love you. And I'm digging the way that it's like, oh my gosh, she cares about me. There's a heart connection. This is unlike anything I've ever experienced. And there's a friction there, because if what she's given me is love and what I've grown up with is love, why is it so different? And, you know, it's like, just from the emotional and mental aspect, I tried pushing her away because it didn't measure up. Because if I believe the truth that my girlfriend at the time loves me, and this is what love is, what the heck have I experienced growing up all those years? And so there was a whole lot of stuff that my wife inherited when she got into a relationship with me.
And if I can say, the reason I know I'm asking this so much is because when I think of my husband, I can't, and he will get teary-eyed at things, and he does talk to me, so it's fantastic. But I feel like it would be very difficult to convince him to work with someone to uncover these feelings and work through them. That's why I know I'm asking like a lot of these questions, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to tell him where that's coming from. Is so, you had mentioned you had these mentors, so I'm not sure if they inspired you to, okay, you know what, I'm going to work through this, because that was a brave, bold move, or just how that came about.
It came about, as weird as this will sound, I knew things weren't right. I didn't know how to make it right. As I spoke about earlier, you know, like in asking my wife how secure she was feeling and then not being a safe place, right? So I heard this fantastic episode on a podcast way back in the beginning that this husband would take his wife away for a weekend and would ask her this series of questions to gauge where she's at, to make sure they're on the same page, and just to make sure that they're in a healthy place, right? He's not blind, blind to what's going on, having a rosy pair of glasses, thinking, hey, my wife's fantastic, while she's fighting postpartum depression. You know what I mean? It's like sometimes we just get wrapped up in what is going on and we don't hear what's being said around us, you know, or to us. And so I had this fantastic weekend planned to take my wife away, you know, for like 3 days. And I had the questions and I thought, yep, everything's going to be fantastic. But I wasn't that safe place. You know, like I said, I wasn't, you know, when she started sharing and I start blowing up and pulling my anger, defensive stuff, it didn't go over so well. So the responses rapidly declined as we went along. You know, it's like, well, you didn't take this one very well. So, you know, what's to make me think that you're going to do this one well? The guys that I met played a role in helping me see who I was that I didn't necessarily realize, like those blind spots. They also pointed out, you know, hey, your upbringing was abusive. That's not something you ever really want to hear. No child wants to know that, you know, their childhood, which they thought was normal, was absolutely, you know, hell on earth. Nobody wants to ever hear that or admit that. And so it's men that I met in the church, it's stuff that I read or listened to on books, you know, because it's like I have dyslexia, so I hear better than I read. And so the men that I met were from church or from work. And again, they were ones, like I talked about earlier, you know, seeing who they were to make sure that they were trustworthy. I mean, I'm insecure at the time when I started this process. I'm not about to put myself in a place where I can fail, right? I want to avoid failure. So I played it safe. But it's as the years have gone along, it's been looking at, you know, where do I feel the gap? What is my wife, you know, telling me now that we're in a better position? What is my wife telling me that is her big concern? And being secure enough to go, okay, my wife is telling me that the finances are a concern for her. Who do I know that, you know, handles finances well? And then approaching them to ask them and being open to hearing their guidance, their wisdom, right? So it's been on parenting, it's been on marriage, finance, time management. You know, I have to allow myself to not feel like I have to have all the answers, because I don't. as much as we'd all love to say, yeah, I am a jack of all trades and I know, you know, I know everything, we don't. But that did not come right away. It was small stuff that I was willing to admit, you know, okay, this doesn't feel right. Like when I see a marriage, you know, between my friends or coworkers or on TV, my marriage doesn't look like that. What the heck is wrong with me? And then trying to find an answer, I honestly wanted a healthy marriage. I wanted to be a good husband. I wanted to be a good father. I wanted to be happy, healthy, and whole. Like I wanted confidence, you know, not unhealthy, braggadocious machismo, right? I wasn't looking for that. I didn't know who I was, but I knew who I didn't want to be, which wasn't necessarily the best place to start, but it was where I started. Could my wife have made me, let's take it a different way. Could my wife have ever tried to impress upon me to go get help? No, not with where I was. It has to be something that the guy wants to change, that he's open to changing, My wife never gave up on me, even when I wasn't deserving of her love or her patience and grace with me. It was because she continued to do that that I finally came around. She loved me through it. I mean, straight out. Because of that, you know, things have now changed.
I really like how you said, and you've done this several times, and I love it. So it feels like this big thing, and it is. It is. Mm-hmm. It is a big thing. But you, for example, just now, all you have to do, and this would really be anyone, but all you have to do is recognize, hey, this isn't right, or I want this to be different. It's your marriage or your relationship with your children, whatever the case may be. You're just recognizing that and then taking any small step. You would just mention talking to someone, reading something, listening to something, just those small resources that you utilized. And so it's not just this one thing or this one relationship. It is all these different things that you utilized to get you to where you are now.
Yeah, it would be almost like if I said, hey, Felicia, we're going to go run a marathon tomorrow where neither of us have, you know, let's just say we haven't run a mile in 5 years. That just doesn't add up, right? It's not realistic. Nobody's expecting any of us to be perfect, period. Nobody's expecting large changes overnight. It's the thing of continuous and gradual growth. You don't see, like when you look at Arnold Schwarzenegger, he didn't jump in a gym on a Monday and go to a competition on a Tuesday. That was years of dedication and intentional process. And the same thing goes for us. But too often we get wrapped up in it, and I'm guilty of it just as much, where it's like, you know, hey, I've started learning this. My results need to now change. It's a constant growth, right? The results will go with us as we're working it. But we have to give ourselves the time and grace to grow into it.
Yeah, I love that. Give yourself the grace and just enjoy the process as much as you can. I'd mentioned this on another episode, but a Buddhist guru told me, don't focus on the outcome. Focus on your every step. Because if you focus on this is how I want to be, you know, completely free of anger, then every time, so you might have one time that you respond where you're not angry and you feel great. And then when you respond, which you inevitably will, because we're continually growing and healing with anger, you feel like you're back at the drawing board. You feel like right. A failure, and then it just starts to spiral. No. Okay. So you responded angry, and another time you didn't, and there's always a next time, and then just keep going the path. And then at one point you are going to realize, oh my gosh, I have changed and healed so much. And I like to say healing journey, because I don't think it ever ends. Like, you can be completely, have complete control of how you how you deal or respond in anger. Mm-hmm. But there's going to be other things that you are going to grow through and heal through. And so just be gentle with yourself and enjoy that process.
Yeah. And the thing to remember is it's like, it's going to take time. You know, we didn't get to being who we are overnight, and we're not going to get to being who we want to be overnight. But that's not to be a woe is me, give up, why start? Quite the opposite, right? As we're going through our journey, I can tell you my kids have seen me change, and they have more trust and faith in me than they did before. So now they know who I was and who I'm working hard to become. And they know that they too can then work to make changes. So people are going to see that. And you're going to encourage people around you and, you know, deepen the relationships that you have. But the other thing is that burden to change overnight is gone. It's lifted if you'll let it go. So the expectation that I have to be a different man or you know, lady tomorrow, you don't. You just have to make intentional decisions. Hey, what am I going to work on? What is really causing the most pain to me and those around me? Okay, great. Let me focus on this. You have to focus on something, but that focus is going to get you growth that you otherwise wouldn't experience. The choice that I had was to continue hating me, because I did. I mean, I didn't like anything about myself, so I can continue to either be in that same place, or I can choose to, you know, give a shot and go a different route. And again, it's like so often we think we're the only ones there, and we're not. So it's like, don't think that it's like not. There are others that have gone on the journey before you. There will be others that come on the journey after you, but take comfort in the fact that it's like there are others going through this same thing, and you know, don't let where you've been or where you are continue to hold you captive, because you hold the key to breaking out of those chains, you know, to unlocking the shackles and the door that, you know, where you're kept right now. So yeah, it's super powerful, but it is scary in the same way.
That is so powerful. I love it. Mike, I absolutely loved our conversation. I want to make sure that you tell the listeners the services that you provide, so what you do and where they can find you.
Okay. So I am focused on coaching men. And right now, primarily that's coming through one-on-one coaching, you know, because our journey does look different. And so helping them to become free from fear, anxiety, and depression, so that we can live boldly and courageously and fully alive. Because, you know, like we talked about with that prison, none of us want to be held there. That's not healthy, and it's sure as heck not enjoyable. As far as getting in connecting with me, my website is the Mike Forster, so themikeforrester.com, or you can follow me on Facebook and Instagram at the Mike Forster. So either of those ways are good to get in touch with me.
Before we end our call, are there any parting thoughts that you want to make sure you leave the listeners with?
Good question. I would say, if anything that you and I have discussed, or that, you know, like there's been stuff brought up that you're feeling emotional about, give yourself the grace to process through it, right? You don't want to have something come up and have you react harshly with those around you or yourself, right? So tread cautiously when stuff is brought up, allow it to come up, but, you know, just don't allow, you know, it to drive you to react in an unhealthy way, if that makes sense. So, continue to push in, and you know, the results of the journey are absolutely worth it. Just keep pressing in, and don't do this alone, please. Community, like your best friends are found out of this process, and you know, it's so worth it. So
that is beautifully said. Thank you so very much. I enjoyed our conversation, learning more about you, learning more about kind of, you know, how my husband's brain might be wired as well. And I really loved that you were open and willing to be on the show, because, and I had mentioned this to you, nowhere in what I put out in the universe does it say it's only for women, my show. I want anybody who is experiencing, like you said, pain, anxiety, depression, those things that are holding us back to living their best life, to do exactly what you said, reach out, find that person or that community, and to begin your healing journey. So thank you, Mike, so much for being on the show. I will make sure all of the links to you, where people can find you, will be in the show notes and on my website. And I just very much appreciate you.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.